Absolute power corrupts absolute.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field. Because it's game time. It's time to make your hard work pay off. Make your mom and dad proud. Make your opponent pay the price. It's time to step up and get it done, son. You go hard or you go home. From the first whistle to the last. Bring it all day, every play. Because you know your boys are going to put on the line for you. They got your back, so you better have theirs. This is about the team. It's about pride. It's about who's the hungriest. So what's it going to be, man? You going to leave it on the field, or you going to leave it inside? You going to leave it or something in your tank? Or you going to do what champions do? Leave nothing. Leave nothing.
Hello, hello, hello. Once again, how y'all people doing? I am JT, a.k.a. The Master, and as always, this is The Master Plan. It's a fine Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm going to be talking about a family rift and a pro football team. I'm going to be talking about the two bowls, the one that's taking place today, the Pro Bowl, and the one that's taking place next week. In Arizona, the Super Bowl. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you would like to talk to me. I have a chat room that's sitting out there waiting for you to jump into. Question, comment, statement. Do what you do in that chat room. What you put in, like I always say, is what you get out of it. So without further ado, what should we get into first? Should we talk about the Pro Bowl? Should we talk about the Super Bowl and the distractions leading up to the Super Bowl? Shall we talk about the family rift that has taken place in a down south? You know what? A $2 billion empire, a wife, a granddaughter and grandkids and daughter that are up in arms because getting cut out of a $2 billion empire. He owns the New Orleans Pelicans. He owns the New Orleans Saints. And Tom Benson, just like any other family, got some issues. And issues are that he has written his daughter and their grandchildren out of the inheritance, and it's going to, when he passes away, supposedly, give it to his wife. It's not, he's been married more than once, so this is his second or third wife, if I'm not mistaken. And Gail Benson is due to take over a $2 billion fortune. Supposedly, there's a lawsuit a lawsuit challenging the transfer from the mother, or the daughter, I should say, and the two grandkids, saying that Tom Benson is not of right mind. The two women can't stand each other, meaning Tom Benson's present wife and Tom Benson's daughter cannot stand each other. It's been pretty ugly. Now, you would think if you got all that money, there's enough money for everybody. But then you would also think, why why give you part of it when I can have all of it? So I guess that's the, how did it reach this point? From what I'm saying here, or seeing here, I should say, the relationship devolved gradually over the course of Tom Benson and Gail Benson's marriage, and bottom out in the past year as the 87-year-old, and he's only 87, health declined. It all came to a head last week in a scene straight out of Shakespeare's King Lear. Renee, which is the daughter, oversaw her father's banking business in San Antonio. Ryan, who's a grandson, ran the family ranch in Johnson City, Texas, and later managed some of the family's auto dealerships. This guy's got money coming out of everywhere. While Renee, which is a granddaughter, and Ryan, which is the grandson, lived in Texas and rarely involved themselves in the New Orleans Saints or New Orleans Pelicans activities. Rita, which is the granddaughter, was being groomed as Tom's heir apparent since she joined the club as an executive in 2001. Rita's enthusiasm impressed her grandfather, and she quickly ascended through the organizational ranks, probably with a little bit of help with her grandfather. By the time Gail married Tom in 2004, Rita, and I'm keeping you all abreast of what I'm saying here, Rita, which is the granddaughter, already had been appointed as owner/executive. While Thursday's lawsuit suggests Rita, the daughter, Ryan and Renee, which are the grandson and granddaughter, were suspicious of Gail's intentions from the outset and depicts her as a gold-digging manipulator, their resentment never was expressed publicly. Somehow she weaseled her way in there and got the total mind of Tom Benson. This is what it sounds like. I'm just saying. The relationship between Gail and Rita, and that's the present wife and the daughter, began to fray in 2005 after Hurricane Katrina, when Rita assumed a larger role in the Saints organization and emerged as the face of the franchise. When the Saints announced their 2006 schedule at an April news conference outside the Superdome, it was the then 29-year-old Rita, not Tom, who addressed the media alongside NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue at the time. This is before Roger Goodell took over. Streets and Smith Sports Business Journal featured Rita in its annual 40 Under 40 three times. She was profiled on NBC's Today Show and ESPN.com and posed for an alluring cover of Portfolio Magazine. Unlike her mother and brother, Rita embraced the spotlight and reveled in the status afforded by her as a position as one of the top female sports executives in the country. However, it might have been a case of too much too soon for the budding executive. In April 2012, Tom placed Rita on administrative leave because of, among other things, an abrasive management style that saw her run through dozens of personal assistants, among them relatives of prominent New Orleans. So, needless to say, Rita, and it sounds like a privileged granddaughter, decided to treat people any way she wanted to. This is what them sound like it to me. Rita returned to the organization before the start of the Saints 2012 season and assumed a prominent role as owner/vice chairman, but her support eternally had eroded. Quite naturally, she had lost some of her allies with her attitude. And I'm just assuming that because of the fact is the way she was. Saints coach Sean Payton tried to write a clause into his contract that would allow him to sever the deal if general manager Mickey Loomis left the team. The underlying reason, Payton wanted no part of the Saints with Rita owning them, and she knew and knew she likely would part ways with Loomis and other executives once in control. This sounds to me like she was not a pleasant person to deal with, and once she got into a position of power, in my opinion, and in my opinion only, it sounded like a spoiled rich girl, not a person that should be a higher executive in the organization, and especially the face of the franchise. And Peyton wasn't alone. Many executives fear for their job security on the day Rita would take charge. Vying for Tom's attention, meanwhile, as Rita's profile grew over the years, Gail's relationship with Tom strengthened, and accordingly, her influence widened. She got more of his ear. Tom trusted her that much more, and Tom may have seen, I'm just saying, the error of his ways with his granddaughter. Gail accompanied Tom to NFL owners' meetings and even attended executive sessions with him. She also played key roles in rebranding of the Pelicans and in the Superdome's naming rights deal with the Mercedes-Benz. When I say they were never apart, I mean almost literally never, a team source said of Gail and Tom. And because of that, a competition developed between Rita, which is, again, Tom's daughter, and Gail, which is Tom's present wife. They were both vying for his attention. Gail, more than anyone, was responsible for a St. Paul-like conversion in Tom's personal life. Excuse me. In recent years, he donated millions of dollars to Catholic charities, Ochsner Medical Center, and Loyola and Tulane universities. And for every lucrative donation, there have been countless more behind-the-scenes gestures. Tom paid for all of former linebacker Ricky Jackson's travel expenses to Canton, Ohio, for his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010, and he did the same for former offensive tackle William Roof in 2012. He quietly assisted in funding health care for numerous retired local priests over the years, including the late Archbishop Philip Hennen. Tom also donated $5 million to former Saints standout Steve Gleason's foundation to fight ALS. If you know anything about Steve Gleason, he presently has ALS, and funded a bronze statue of Gleason's iconic punk block in the Saints' first game at the Dome post-Katrina that was erected 3 years ago. In November, he pledged $11 million in donations to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the largest gift in the venue's 50-year history. One source quotes, "She's the best thing that ever happened to him image-wise." However, the increasing frequency and lucrative nature of these very same donations troubled Rita, Ryan, and Renee, who grew concerned that the family cookie jar was being raided. Oh, boy. Multiple sources said that the internal strife had taken a toll on Tom in recent months, and as his health declined, quite naturally, he gets weaker. The rivalry between Gail and Rita, Ryan and Renee intensified. Then an inevitable power clash ensued, and eventually exploded into the soap opera-like chain of events that were revealed last week. In a December 27th letter purportedly from Tom to Renee, Rita, and Ryan that was attached as an exhibit in Thursday's lawsuit read, "Suddenly, after I remarried, you all became offensive and did not act in an appropriate manner and even had arguments among yourselves, which created a very unpleasant family situation. I will not stand for it. Made me very unhappy and uncomfortable. This situation cannot continue at my age." Legal experts believe a long, ugly court battle awaits. Both sides are dug in. Lines have been drawn. High-powered legal teams engaged. In anticipation of Thursday's legal action by the three R's, as they're coined, Rita, Ryan, and Renee, Sources said Tom's legal team recorded interviews with him throughout each of the ownership transfers from the three R's to Gale. They even videoed his consultation with doctors. It's unclear if Rita, Ryan, and Renee were as prepared for battle, but rest assured their formidable legal team will mobilize in short order. The three R's, that's how I'll say that side, Rita, Ryan, and Renee, appear to underestimate Tom's devotion to his third wife. Last October, Tom and Gail renewed their wedding vows in celebration of their 10th anniversary. Ultimately, it was a fourth R they appeared to overlook, romance. Tom's devotion to Gail and his commitment to the long-term success of the Saints and Pelicans ultimately proved more powerful than anything else in his life, even the love of his immediate family. The oversight was a costly mistake on the part of the three R's, potentially a $2 billion misjudgment. $2 billion is on the line here. That's the total worth of the Benson's car dealerships, the NFL team that he owns, and the NBA basketball team that he owns, among other probably other businesses. But a $2 billion empire that, because Renee and her two children seem like they're losing their grip on their father and have a disdain for their stepmother, it's the possibility that they get nada, nothing. And that's what the battle is here for right now. What's happened is this. He put, like I said earlier in the beginning of this commentary, that he had moved transfer. He had transferred the ownership, if anything was to happen to him, to his present-day wife, his third wife, and not his daughter and two grandkids. Because the fact is, he can't deal with the way they've been treating his stepmother, or his wife, I should say, and that it's becoming increasingly detrimental to his health and strength on him. Never underestimate anybody. That's all I can tell you. Never underestimate anybody. Treat those as if you want to be, how you want to be treated. And because it can bite you in the butt quicker than you think you might. You walk over that bridge and you burn the bridge behind you. Just be sure that you don't have to turn around and walk back over that bridge. Otherwise, you have nowhere to go. And this looks like you will have very little, if any, say in what takes place in the organization of the specialty teams. If Gail, from what I'm seeing, it takes over everything, which it looks like she will, then goodbye, Renee. Goodbye, Rita. Goodbye, Ryan. You had a nice run when it lasted, but you may have to go and find a real job. And not if it's your daddy, ride on your daddy's coattails. If it's your grandfather, ride on your grandfather's coattails. That's all I got to say. That doesn't make a difference how much money you have, how little money you have. Everybody, every family has issues. The more money you have, the bigger the issues. That's obvious. $2 billion fortune and three heirs. Well, three former heirs. Let me put it this way. Three look like former heirs. $2 billion and you can't find a way to get along. You want total control. You want to push your stepmother out of the way. when your father and grandfather is totally devoted to this woman that he loves? Good luck. All right. Just stay tuned, people, because when I get an update and I'm able to get on this show, I will update you on the days of the Benson Lives. Let me put it that way. Should be making it to a soap opera because it sounds like it's been one for quite a few years. And it hasn't seemed like the show's still going strong for now. All right, let's move on. Because we have a few other things I want to talk about. And one of them is this. You know, I meant to mention this past Thursday, and then I forgot it again also on Saturday when we were on the FSP crew show on Thursday or on the FSP show yesterday. I told you people in the beginning that I did not like this kid at all. I told you people, I think this guy was going to be a total bust. I even said he was a spoiled rich kid because his daddy and his parents had money, and he had that spoiled kid type of attitude, and figured he could do and say anything he wants at any time, and he hasn't grown up yet. Well, this is citing nearly 20 Browns sources. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler and Pat McNanum reported Johnny Manziel, exhibited a year-long pattern of lacking commitment and preparation to football and a continued commitment to nightlife during his rookie year. Hello? This is nothing new. Knew that was going to happen. What did he tell you? I said, I'm not going to change my lifestyle. My weekend is my weekend. I can do whatever I want. If I want to party, I'm going to party. But and within the same breath, he said, I'm going to study the playbook. Well, one player called Manziel, and this is a quote, 100% joke. Now, if you remember, before the last game of the season, Johnny Manziel was fined for missing a team treatment. That's what the team said for his injured hamstring. Well, in reality, team security reportedly found, Johnny Manziel drunk off his, and I'm saying this just like I see it, drunk off his ass the morning before the Browns season finale. He was fined for missing a treatment for his injured hamstring and spent the Week 17 loss to Baltimore in Cleveland's locker room. During his first NFL start, several sources said Manziel either didn't know the plays in the huddle or didn't call them correctly. Sources also told Fowler and McManum that since departed, offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan preferred Jimmy Garoppolo and Tom Savage to Manziel as a 2014 draft prospect. Fowler and McMahon claim Manziel still has some support in the Browns building, though it's mostly on the business side. So the reports that the head coach didn't really want Johnny Manziel when they drafted him at the time probably rang true, because the offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, felt the same way. But because it's press, because they felt they needed a big splash, and probably pressure from team ownership or what have you, they drafted Johnny Manziel. And guess what? You got what you paid for. And I hate to say I told you so, but I'm going to say it. I told you so. This guy's going to be a joke, plain and simple. He's got that spoiled rich kid attitude that I can do what I want to when I want to because of who I am. And you need me. I don't need you. Well, he may have a short lifespan in the NFL if he doesn't turn himself around. And even if he turns himself around, I still think, I still believe, and I have to prove me wrong, that he doesn't have what it takes to be a starting NFL quarterback in the National Football League. He's vertically challenged, for one. His fundamentals in at the quarterback is highly questioned for another. He doesn't make great decisions on the field. Now, some of that may change if he decides, and it's up to him, if he decides to put the work in, but I don't think he was. I think he got off. He was playing off the off his pure skill and really didn't know the playbook. But he was great at improvising, and that's what got him by. But being in a structured environment compared to the college life, now he's in a very structured environment. Now he has to learn the playbook backwards and forth, and be able to regurgitate it in a huddle to grown men that rely on him to for their livelihood with wives and family. I don't know if he's ready for that commitment. He didn't show it. And he may be one of the bigger busts from the 2014 season. I think he will be. I don't think he's got it in him. His DNA doesn't dictate. But, and the Browns also said, the Browns owner said this now, we'll be looking for a quarterback. We're looking for a quarterback. So, stay tuned. The NFL Combine's coming up. There's a lot of free agents out there, including Brian Hoyer, who was, for the most part, the starting quarterback for most of the year, majority of the year, for the Cleveland Browns. He may not leave. He may stay there. Or they may be looking for another quarterback. There's some free agent quarterbacks out there that there's a possibility that may have a home called the Cleveland Browns in their future. So you never know what's going to happen here. But they use them as a high draft pick. 22nd, I understand that. And even the other one, Justin Gilbert, has shown some immaturity issues. He has to turn himself around. He would pick sixth. They have two draft picks that right now have a lot of issues. Maturity issues, and are they really NFL material? Will they ever become NFL material? Only future play will dictate that. OTAs, off-season program, training camp. So we have to stay tuned to that. All right, let's move on to this guy. Another guy with some issues. T. Rich. Colts don't commit to him in 2015. Didn't play the last two games. Was inactive, supposedly with some personal issues. Been absolutely horrible when he was drafted by Cleveland. And when they traded him to Indianapolis thought they had stolen a gem from the Cleveland Browns. And it may be the other way around. The draft picks that the the Colts gave up to the Browns. Maybe just, I wouldn't say to steal a year. It could be. Because this guy is worth absolutely nothing. He's been absolutely horrible the time he's been with the Indianapolis Colts. When you get Dan Heron, who was he wasn't even a third running back. Well, he was a third running back. He was on the practice squad. And he overcomes you, and he becomes the lead back, and he plays a hell of a lot better than you are, and you were the number one pick at one point, or top pick, I should say. a top pick a few years back, and you can't even get on the field, get and you're inactive for the most important games of your team season in the playoffs. You got a problem. You may not be on this roster. And from what you've been doing for the last two seasons, you may not even be on anybody's roster. But the fact is, you haven't been playing that well. You have a fully guaranteed $3.184 million salary. That's guaranteed for 2015. But the Colts could be paying you to disappear because the fact is you're that bad and you take up a roster spot when they can get somebody can probably cheaper and play a hell of a lot better. So, Trent Richardson, you probably need to hit the gym in the off season and dedicate yourself to trying to save face for what you've been doing for the last two seasons. Now, and let me tell you something. I play fantasy football. Everybody knows that. That's one of the reasons why I started this show a few years back. And one of the things, and I've called out on various shows, and if you want me to give you my resume on the team, on the players that I've called out, I specialize in running backs, okay? One thing I can pick out is a running back, a gem of a running back that is going to ball out. Does Jamaal Charles happen to come to mind? Does Arian Foster have to come to mind? Does Le'Veon Bell happen to come to mind? Those are the players that were obscure at one point that I called out and told you were going to be superstars. Is Jamaal Charles a superstar? I think so. Is Arian Foster a superstar? I think so. Is Le'Veon Bell a superstar? Second-year player, I told you last year when he was a rookie, this boy coming into this year, 2014 season, is going to be a star. I specialize in running backs, so I'm partial to running backs, whoever they are. So when I'm telling you this running back here has the talent, but he hasn't displayed the commitment, and that's the problem. He wants the glory, but he doesn't want to do the work to get that glory. Until he dedicates himself and commits himself to want to be the best, this is what you get. 2.9, 3.1 yards carry. Maybe even worse than that. That's what you're getting from Trent Richardson. And that's not going to cut it, especially from a young back or any kind of back. Supposed to be a featured back with a high draft pick, extremely high draft pick, and you get absolutely garbage from him. I'm going to take a quick pause for the cause, and I want you to listen to a couple commercials, and then we will be back. See ya.
Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics Show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP Show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Bring in three-time Super Bowl champ, Hall of Famer, and Fox analyst Troy Aikman by phone. Troy, as a quarterback, does an underinflated ball make that big of a difference?
Well, I believe that it does, Mike. When you're talking about playing in inclement weather, talking about playing in the cold as it was, you know, in New England, that the balls get hard, they get tougher to handle. It's why some quarterbacks have reverted to using gloves late in the season. Tom Brady does not like wearing a glove on his throwing hand, and so to deflate the balls to some degree, it does help with gripping them and then throwing, being able to throw them more effectively. I will tell you that even going back to when I was playing, balls and how they were prepared going into a game was an issue. I remember having conversations with Jerry Jones, who was on the competition committee. Unlike college at that time, you could not prepare the balls during the week. Once I retired, they changed that rule, and now each team is able to bring, as you've discussed, they're able to bring their bag of balls whichever way the quarterback prefers to have them to play. But this was done after they had been inspected by the officials, and that is something I've never heard of.
And as you mentioned, Tom Brady does not like to wear a glove, and quarterbacks know. So what are the chances Brady didn't know those balls weren't inflated to regulation?
Well, I can't imagine anyone doing anything to the footballs without the quarterback having knowledge of it. I know, based on my experience and knowing how much effort went in to trying to get the balls as game-ready and yet still fall within the guidelines of the NFL rules was challenging. And there's no way that anyone would have done anything to the game balls without discussing it with me first. And so I can't imagine that Tom Brady did not know that air had been taken out of the balls. My guess is it was his request. It's the way he preferred to throw with them, and that's why it was done.
Plays football well, and I'm a huge fan of that. And I apologize because it looks like I've been on mute for quite a while. Wow. Okay. Well, it is what it is. Apologize for the last half hour. It looks like I blew for the most part of the show. And I really apologize for that. Wow. Can't believe I did that, but it is what it is. And all I have to say is this. Next week's show will be a lot better. We'll be prepping for the Super Bowl. I'm going to be breaking it down for the Super Bowl. And a lot of it will be each position. And what I feel that will be the shining light when it gets that whatever team to the promised land of being the Super Bowl champion. This Sunday we have the Pro Bowl, where Team Carter and Team Urban will go up against each other. Where Team Carter, where Team Urban. Looks like he has Team Cowboy on his team, where he has quite a bit of Cowboys. Tony Romo, DeMarco Murray, Jason Witten, Zach Martin. He's got a lot of his fellow Cowboys on the team. So I'm going to say he's Team Cowboy versus Team Carter, because Michael Irvin seemed like he wanted many Cowboys that could possibly get on his team to go up against Team Carter. Jason Garrett is the coach of the Team Irvin, and John Harbaugh is the coach of Team Carter. So it's a Cowboy coach and a Raven coach with a mixture of teammates going against each other, which should be pretty interesting. At 8 p.m. tonight, there'll be a two-minute warning will be added to the first and third quarters, and the ball will change hands for after each quarter. This will increase the opportunity for quarterbacks to direct two-minute drills, which are especially exciting for fans. No kickoff. The coin toss will determine which team is awarded possession first. The ball will be placed on the 24-yard line at the start of each quarter and after scoring plays. Cover two and press coverage. The defense will be permitted to play cover two and press coverage. In previous years, only man coverage was permitted except for goal line situations. Beginning at the two-minute mark of every quarter, if the offense does not gain at least 1 yard, the clock will stop as if the play were an incomplete pass. This rule will make the team with the ball attempt to gain yardage toward the end of each quarter. The game clock will start after an incomplete pass on the signal of the referee, except inside the last 2 minutes of the first half and the last 5 minutes of the second half. A 25-second play clock will be adopted instead of the typical 40-second, 25-second clock. As it relates to sacks, the game clock will not stop when a quarterback sacks outside of the final 2 minutes of the game. Currently, the game clock stops in these situations outside of the 2 minutes of the second and fourth quarters. And quite naturally, if you go online to ProBowl.com or something like that, you could pick up the team rosters on offense and defense of Team Harbaugh. Team Carter and Team Irvin. Again, I apologize. It looks like I was on mute for most of the show, at least a half hour. Make sure that we rectify the problem next week. Tune in next week, same time, same place, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Sunday, where we will be, like I said, previewing for the Super Bowl, the New England Patriots, and the Seattle Seahawks. Hopefully we will have some type of resolution, or maybe a soon-to-be resolution of Deflategate. Also tune in on Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, will be the FSP Crew Show, where I host along with Jeff and Mike. And then Saturday, where is the FSP Show? Victor Gardner is the host. I am the co-host, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. With that being said, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Pro Bowl, and we're out of here.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field.